You are listening to TRC Unleashed.
Hello, Gamecock Nation. Welcome to TRC Unleashed, episode number 41. I am your host, Buck, and I am joined tonight by T-Bone and the G-Man from the great state of South Carolina. And we are coming to you on January 31st, a little less than a week away from signing day. We got a very special podcast for you tonight. We have a special guest coming up a little later in the show. I think you'll probably recognize him. He is Phil Kornblut of the South Carolina Sports Network and host of Sports Talk, has agreed to come on and talk a little recruiting with us. So we're excited to have Phil on there. But right now, we're going to talk a little bit about what's happened in the month of January since the bowl game. And we're probably just going to have to try to fill some airspace. We were talking beforehand, I don't really know what has happened. You know, Ace Sanders had told us he was coming back, and now he's told us that he's leaving. So, T-Bone, how disappointed were you when you heard that Ace was going to be gone?
I'm offended that you even suggest that we should be disappointed. We should do nothing but support him as he moves forward in his endeavors. All true Gamecocks are happy for him.
Right, yeah. He gave us the three best years of his life.
Right.
So we should,
Seriously speaking, very disappointed. I think the mentality he brought to the team, you know, he was disappointed every time he touched the ball that did not result in a touchdown, and he showed that kind of passion. You know, it's kind of the same way Swearinger was on defense, and losing both of those guys in 1 year, I'm really concerned about that. I wonder who's going to step up and be kind of that physical presence. And so, you know, certainly do hope the best for him, blah, blah, you know, everything we're supposed to say. And hope he does well, makes millions. But man, I'd love to have him one more year. But the bigger issue there is we need to start having like a team meeting the night before that deadline or something. Buy him a bunch of pizza and lock him in a room and not let him go. Because I swear, Sidney Rice all over again. Not leaving, not leaving, not leaving, not leaving. Hey, I got a new cell phone. Suddenly he's gone.
Everybody take their take all their electronics and put them in a basket at the door and just lock them in a room. All the draft eligible juniors. So Ace will be gone. We'll have to try to find a way to replace him. We replaced somebody else pretty quickly on the coaching staff. And Deke Adams from North Carolina is going to be our new defensive line coach. G-Man, wasn't that kind of a strange situation, the way we lost our defensive line coach?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was sort of was a head scratcher, considering that Brad Lawing has been here since, I don't know, I think the Dietzel era,
Yeah.
Here's a little unknown fact. Brad Lawing actually penned the original words to Step to the Rear. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. I mean,
back in 1893.
Lawing's been here forever, you know, through three or four different administrations. And I think he was some sort of, I think he had tenure or something like that on the staff. But yeah, I mean, it was sort of a head scratcher when he just up and left. And it sort of leaked out that maybe he went down and interviewed, and it's not permitted for guys on staff to leave or interview for a lateral position. And once the HBC found out about it, that he didn't have a job when, you know, basically he was told, you don't have a job when you come back. I mean, at least that's the spin coming out of some of the media types or the insiders that I'm hearing. But be that as it may, what do we really know? I mean, you know, there's, of course, once one of these coaches leaves, it's kind of like when Kevin Steele left last year at Clemson. You know, I mean, all of a sudden the guy was mentally unstable and, you know, just he was a disaster, of course, when he's gone. And now that Lawing's gone, there's all this talk about how he was a dirty recruiter and he couldn't recruit and all this stuff. so who knows, really? Obviously, he did a good job with it with the defensive line. I mean, we had some great, great players come through the program the last few years that he's coached. Norwood, Matthews, Robertson, obviously Clowney and Taylor and Quarles. I mean, the list goes on. And so you could see why he would have been an attractive hire for somebody with the product he's been turning out. But, you know, I was real pleased with the quick reaction. I think they had somebody that they knew they were going to go after right away who has a reputation as a strong recruiter, especially in the areas that we recruit, that being Atlanta, North Carolina. So had connections on the staff. And, you know, I feel like in the long run, you know, we may be better off because Long, you know, he's been around for a long time. Who knows how long he was going to coach. And now we've got a young, energetic guy who I think is going to bring something to the table. So, you know, all in all, I think it was a win.
Yeah, the Long thing was kind of funny because at first everybody's angry. You know, why would he move to Florida? Why would he move to our division rival? And then a couple of things. I think Ward said something to the effect, it's, you know, between Lawing and his family. So you start thinking, well, maybe he's got a sick family member down there that he needs to be. And you start feeling a little bit sorry for him. And then Spurrier makes his comments and then you're mad at him again. And I'm not talking about me personally. I keep my distance from this kind of stuff.
So, yeah, exactly. You're not that engaged.
But it's right. Funny to watch the ebbs and flows on Twitter and on the message boards as more and more news gets leaked out. Now, what recruit was it that he supposedly drunk dialed?
Dunlop.
Oh, yeah.
Carlos Dunlop, the one from, I think, Dorchester or somewhere a few years ago, went to Florida.
Right.
Purportedly, he was a silent commit to the Gamecocks for a long time, and then he flipped to Florida, and the leak now that Long is gone, of course, is that he drunk dialed him and called him a female dog. Okay,
right,
that's the word on the street. But who knows?
In all fairness, you know, Buck did the same thing to him, so.
Well, now the heat's off me. People aren't blaming me for him going to Florida anymore, which is good. That was some baggage I was just not carrying very well.
Before we move on, are we taking an editorial position that it's wrong for us to drunk dial the recruits and call them bitches?
Yeah, you know, the Half-Cocked show this past week did a whole segment on tweeting to recruits, and George Stevens, who was on there, told a story about how he got really drunk at a wedding. I guess it was New Year's Eve that we lost to Florida State, and somehow he was in the same hotel as Demir Byrd and I can't remember who the other player was, but anyway, he said he went over and just basically slurred all over him for about 30 minutes, and he feels like he's the reason that they wound up coming to South Carolina. So yeah, gee whiz, these folks that tweet at recruits is I don't know. I hope they're not a big portion of our listening audience, because if they are, they now know that they suck.
Well, they you know, we are who we are. You know, we consider ourselves the quintessential outsiders rather than insiders, and you know, people who wouldn't dream of doing something like that. We're just giving commentary, and I can't imagine having the gumption to do that. That's just crazy. But anyway.
Well, and to think that they're going to have some sort of, I don't think there's any possibility that they could ever have any positive impact. It's only negative.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, true. I mean, there's no way. I mean, some crazy fan's going to, you know, convention. No way.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't realize B Click Clack liked me so much, and she's a South Carolina fan. Where's that letter of intent? I want to sign it now.
You mean B Catfish?
B Cat. the girl who catfished us at the Arkansas game.
He totally catfished us.
So now we've already mentioned, we're not even 5 minutes into the show hardly, and we've mentioned two of our Twitter friends already. So, what else has been going on? Are there even any other sports going on? Oh, wait, basketball is being played, right?
At times.
T-Bone, you can just take your headphones off and shut your mic down for for about 5 minutes.
Well, apparently, I have just as much input on or thoughts about basketball as our shooters did last night. So.
Oh, my gosh. You just got to write that one off. That Florida game last night was brutal. After playing, and G-Man, I don't know if you went to the Arkansas game on Saturday, but after falling behind 15-3, they just mopped the floor with a pretty decent Arkansas team.
Yeah, I was there, and it was pretty disheartening when it was 15-3, and you're thinking, we're going to get blown out of our own gym, by a decent but not great team. And then all of a sudden, I mean, it just, Martin called timeout. It's like the lights came on, and we just went crazy. I mean, Richardson had a good game. Ellington had a good game. It's interesting if you look at the box score from that game. What's the guy? All of a sudden I'm drawing a blank. Brenton Williams had 0 points in that ball game. Zero. Yeah. But anyway, they played well, and so I was anticipating maybe a little, run of good play after that ball game, but I did not watch the game last night, thankfully. I got in my car to come home. I was working late, and I got in the car, and I turned on the radio hoping to hear some positive news and maybe catch the second half. And they said, 15 minutes left to go, and the score is Florida 46. And I thought they were going to say, 35 or 32 or 38, but no. 15 is what they said. And so yeah. I immediately clicked it off and never turned it back on.
Yeah, when you have 15 points after 25 minutes of gameplay, this is the shot clock era. This is Dean Smith is not pulling his team out into the four corners in a game. I mean, no. Yeah, that was bad. But it's so hard to know what to think of this team, because when you think of losing Harris, losing Gill, losing Cook from last year's team, and Gill and Harris somewhat unexpectedly losing those guys, and then Martin coming in and only having a short period of time to bring kids in, bringing in Carrera, the two Lithuanians, did a pretty decent job to put – he's done a really good job to put a competitive team on the floor, given what we've lost since last year. And, you're disappointed when you get beat by 40 points on the road at Florida, but Florida is, pencil those guys in for the Final Four. They might be the best team in the country in a very watered-down NCAA this year, it seems like. I think Florida's got a good shot to go all the way.
Yeah, let me say this about our team, and you're exactly right. I think Martin did all he could do under the circumstances to get some players on the roster who were respectable. And that Carrera kid, I tell you what, if he was 6'8", he'd be playing for one of the top 6, 7, 8 schools in the country. The only reason he's not is because of his size, and he's got energy. He's got length, long arms, and he's a fighter, scrapper. I mean, I love that kid. But he's just going to struggle. You're going to struggle with that kid as your four man. And it's also going to be difficult when your five man is oftentimes 6'5" or 6'6". They're just under-talented. They don't have many scores, don't have many shooters. But I'll tell you what they do is they play – tough defense. They drive to the basket. It's a completely different product out there on the court this year. Watching them running, organized offense, playing tough defense. I think the groundwork is being laid. If we can get some talent in here, which is obviously the number one factor. Don't kid yourself. Talent wins, especially in college basketball. But if we get some talent in here, they're going to be a good, productive, competitive team in a couple of years. So I think Martin's doing a great job, and he is extremely entertaining to watch at a home basketball game.
Yeah. And didn't he say in his introductory press conference that he was going to curb the language?
I don't know, but if it was more before this, I'll tell you what. Sometimes it's just worth watching him and you know, taking your eyes off the game. I love the stare downs he gives them when they come to the sideline after a bad play. It's just a stare.
Yeah.
I mean, and it is an ominous stare. I mean, those guys, man, they don't look at it. They're looking at the ceiling, looking at the floor. I mean, they're doing whatever they can to avoid eye contact with that guy.
Yeah, he grabbed Brenton Williams by the head a couple of games ago. Did you see that?
No.
It was one of those Bobby Knight situations. I was like, don't put your hands on the player. But he, like, grabbed Brenton Williams' face and his hands, and it looked like he was just going to rip his head off his body. And Williams just, you know, stood there and looked at him.
Yeah, on those stairs, there's, you know, and you run into this from time to time just in your private personal life. Somebody gives you a look, and the look goes a second too long, and it starts getting awkward.
Right.
What Martin does, it goes beyond that awkwardness. It gets to, like, you know, it's like offensive, and it goes beyond offensive, and it becomes like personally insulting, and then it becomes like a religious put down kind of. I don't know. It's like he's judging you as a member of the animal kingdom at some point. It just goes on forever. I can't watch the games.
There's one, like, there's one on YouTube from when he was at Kansas State when I think he stared at a player for the entire TV timeout. And it was just like a 5-minute stare.
Yeah.
It's and he's not. I swear, my wife hasn't looked at me that long in 5 years combined.
I was going to say, when you were talking about the awkward stare that just keeps, like, it sounds like you're pretty much most of your dating life. Was it not?
Well, no. It was awkward, averted glances for most of my
right. Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny how a personality like that on TV, Frank Martin looks like he's 6'8" and like 300 pounds of all muscle in those suits that he wears. I mean, he looks so intimidating. And I met him at that Gamecock event up here in Atlanta, and he's, you know, he's maybe 6'3". And he was not nearly as big as I thought he was going to be. And it's just his demeanor just makes him look so much bigger and more intimidating. It was a nice guy too. I mean, really, really nice guy. So I you know, he's got his work cut out for him. And, but I think we've got a shot to have some good basketball teams, in the next few years. Unfortunately, this year is just not going to be one of them, but again, nice job putting putting a competitive team out there at least.
Well, I'll say this. They're better than last year with a lot less talent than last year.
Right. So. Yeah, yeah.
That might be the perfect way to look at it right there.
What do you think Darren Horn would do with this team?
You know, like 2-26.
Would be almost winless. Poor Darren Horn. What's he doing? Doesn't he have a gig with ESPN these days?
I don't know. I just remember – all they did was run the high ball screen. That was pretty much it. And run this.
Yeah. Yeah.
This trapping full court defense that resulted in a layup or a dunk on just about every other possession.
Yeah. But that first year when he was running that full court trapping defense, we thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
We thought, oh man, this is a style we've always needed to play.
Yeah.
Until we saw all those breakaway dunks, and then,
well, yeah, I was going to say, I think we set a record that year for the most alley-oop dunks given up in a season.
Right, right.
Yeah,
you know, that's a good little question for the rapid fire we're going to do with Phil here. What's if Darren Horn is the worst basketball coach ever at South Carolina? Who's the second worst?
It's got to be Fig.
Fig Newton.
Yeah,
Darren Horn or Steve Newton. There we go.
Yeah, just do it that way.
Who would you take?
Right. Rapid fire. Darren Horn or Steve Newton?
All right. Okay. Well, with that, we will get to a pre-tape segment with Mr. Kornblut and talk about some recruiting. All right, with 2013 signing day just a few days away, we have a very special guest joining us to talk recruiting. This gentleman, in our minds, is the original recruiting guru, the host of Sports Talk on the South Carolina Radio Network, and a 6-time winner of the South Carolina Sportscaster of the Year, Mr. Phil Kornblut. Phil, thank you for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure. Hope everybody's doing well.
Well, let's get right to the heart of the matter here. You're on the air with three really neurotic Gamecock fans, which I understand is probably a little redundant. You know, we're coming off we're coming off back-to-back 11-win seasons, back-to-back top 10 finishes, and somehow the closer that signing day gets, it always seems to just bring us down as we watch other schools land big-time recruits at the last minute. And while we always seem to crawl across the finish line, and I know Jadeveon Clowney on Valentine's Day and Marcus Lattimore a few years ago, but we always seem to kind of thud right there, at least compared to some of our rivals. So give us your take on the South Carolina recruiting class as it stands today, and tell us why we should feel better about what we're going to be bringing in here.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Imagine that as you sit here today, 6 days from signing day, that Neyti Rogers was still out there, that David Williams was still out there, that Connor Mitch was still out there, that Pharaoh Cooper, Shrine Bowler, was still out there. Let's just say those guys are still out there. Kelsey Griffin. And on signing day, they all signed with South Carolina. You'd be dancing in the streets. You'd feel like, wow, yeah, what a great day. What a great finish. What a great class.
Right.
The point is, you've already got those guys. They're already part of your class. It doesn't matter if you get them on the last day or if you got them back in June or you got them 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So the important thing is what you've got now and not necessarily what's going to happen on signing day. Believe me, there's a lot of orchestration that goes on with some schools to get guys who they already know they're going to get to wait till signing day so they can make that splash. And that's great. But you know what? Doesn't mean a hill of beans. It's what you got now. And so South Carolina's got another top 20, top 25 class, depending on who you want to believe. They've addressed, for the most part, a lot of their needs. The linebacker situation is still iffy, and they're holding on four linebackers here at the very end. If they can get two of them, maybe they'll get just one, but if they could get two of them, that would be outstanding. And then they've got Keith Bryant out there, the defensive lineman, who's pretty highly prized, and they still have a great shot with him. Bryant may very well go to signing day. Yannick Ngakoue might very well go to signing day. The three other linebackers, Chaiwell Lyons, Sky Moore, and Jonathan Walton, I don't think they'll go that far. I think we're going to know on those guys before then. In fact, Walton, as we talk tonight, Walton could announce something tonight. He's made his decision. He's supposed to contact the schools tonight. That's an any second sort of thing that could happen with a decision from him for either USC or Auburn. So, you know, my answer to you and other Gamecock fans who are fretting over not having bells and whistles on Wednesday, don't fret it, because you've already got the guys that would make you happy if they announced on Wednesday.
Well, good job. You actually made me feel better. I'll probably, you know, go back to being neurotic by the time I wake up in the morning. I feel that does make me feel a little better. So out of this group of linebackers that South Carolina still has on the board, you know, if you could look into your crystal ball, who do you think is the most likely to wind up a Gamecock?
Let me tell you who I think is most unlikely.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to get Lyons, and I don't think they're going to get Ngakoue. Walton, you know, he's made his decision. The fact that he did not commit to Auburn on his visit last weekend after saying that it was his dream to play in the Iron Bowl, and he had a chance to go ahead and end that right then and there and pick Auburn. And Auburn's recruiting him for offense. South Carolina's recruiting him for a linebacker. Maybe he prefers linebacker. Maybe he wants to get away from home. That tells me that he's really thinking hard about South Carolina. I like their chances to get him. I like their chances to get Sky Moore right now. You know, Sky Moore is basically South Carolina and Vanderbilt. I would hope they could beat Vanderbilt head-to-head on a pretty good linebacker prospect. He's a very good student. Maybe the academic thing means a little bit more to him going to an academic institution like Vandy. Maybe that'll come into play. I think it'll be at least one of those two, if not both. I don't see them getting Lyons. I don't see them getting Ngakoue as things stand tonight.
You know, it's been strange to watch you know, as South Carolina fans, we're definitely riding a high with the way we finished, and we're losing, I don't know, what is it, our top five or six linebackers, but yet we've struggled to, it seems like, at least, to get linebackers interested in us. You know, Matt Rowland caused a lot of consternation among the Gamecock faithful when he switched his pledge to Florida. Any insight as to why there's been such a struggle to get the linebackers? Is there something on the coaching staff that maybe turning these guys off?
No. I wouldn't think anything like that. First of all, keep in mind that, yes, you're losing a lot of linebackers from this past season's team. There's probably more linebackers on the roster than you would think, considering that Kelvin Rainey played linebacker in high school, could easily make the move. You look at the incoming class, maybe a Gerald Turner could play linebacker. Maybe not. Maybe he's going to be too big to play linebacker. He played some linebacker in high school. I've got him at 6'2", 245 right now. Maybe he's going to grow into something too big. There could be some other guys they could convert into linebackers as time moves on. I think if Rowland and if Brendan Langley had held to their commitments, South Carolina wouldn't be in this scramble mode with these other linebackers right now. I think they would have felt pretty good with what they already had committed. I mean, Lawrence Bryant is an outstanding linebacker. Right. He's going to get a chance to play right away. Mo Kamara is a linebacker. He's probably going to get a chance to play right away. And they were counting on Kamara being that third linebacker and maybe taking one more in this class. You know, for whatever reason, it didn't work out, and it's left him in kind of a scramble mode here to try to get a couple of more just to help them with their depth. You know, linebacker is one of those positions where you don't want to be caught thin, and right now with their numbers, they're in that situation where they're going to be a little thin unless they get a couple of more or they move some people to linebacker.
So switching to the other side of the ball, you know, much has been made of Steve Spurrier being unable to land that marquee quarterback so far in his time at South Carolina, with the possible exception of Steven Garcia, who was pretty highly rated coming out of high school. Is Connor Mitch that star quarterback that Spurrier has been looking for? And you know, what do they see in that kid that makes him so coveted?
Well, I think their quarterback recruiting has gotten gradually better as G.A. Mangus has come on and taken it over and gone out and identified players that he likes and players that he thinks can run that zone read offense. You know, Connor Shaw was one of those guys that he identified right after he got to South Carolina as someone who he thought could run the offense, and he went out and got him, and the rest is history. I mean, Connor's done a heck of a job. Now, Connor Mitch is 6'3", 215 pounds. He can play in a spread. He can play in a pro offense. He's a guy that threw for a ton of yards, both as a junior and as a senior. And he also runs extremely well. So he brings the kind of skills to their offense that they need in a quarterback. And, yes, he was a very highly rated quarterback. He was an area elite 11 kind of guy. He would have been a Shrine Bowl candidate had he gone to the Shrine Bowl combines. He didn't do that. So he's already enrolled in school. He'll go through spring practice. He'll have the benefit of working early with Spurrier and Mangus and picking things up. So I think this is a guy that they obviously like a lot. They're in a situation now where they've got it, where they only have to take one quarterback in a class, and they've got their the quarterbacks separated by classes now, where they're pretty well covered as they move forward. You'll have a senior this year in Connor Shaw. You'll have a junior in Dylan Thompson. You'll have a redshirt freshman in Brendan Nosovich. You'll have a true freshman in Connor Mitch. And if you would have had you would have had a sophomore, I believe, if Tanner McAvoy had stayed. Would he have been a redshirt freshman or a sophomore? He would have been a sophomore.
He would have been
a
sophomore, right.
Yeah,
right.
So you'd have had it spaced out exactly the way you like it, one in each class. So they're in good shape. They're in the best shape they've ever been in as far as quarterbacks go since Spurrier's been here.
Yeah, you brought up a real point of pain for T-Bone here. He's been on the Tanner McAvoy bandwagon for a long time. And
I don't pretend to follow recruiting closely, but I do know that Tanner McAvoy is getting a long look from Florida, which just kind of makes everything I've been joking about for the last 3 months seem very painful and very acute right now.
Right. Well, you know, he went out to a junior college, Arizona Western, and did extremely well. And West Virginia got on him. Florida got on him. So he's going to do well. You know, for whatever reason, it didn't work out for him in Columbia. I think that he didn't want to be patient. He didn't want to pay his dues and wait behind these guys. And, you know, he may have fallen into disfavor with the coaches a little bit too, maybe with his practice habits or his off-the-field habits. Don't know for sure. But obviously it's turned out to be a good move for him to go somewhere else. And South Carolina has been able to fill the void by having a Nosevich and by bringing in a Connor Mitch.
And I think, too, one thing to bring up is, you know, Dylan Thompson, you know, kind of comes out of nowhere. And I think Tanner may have noticed that, you know, I mean, none of us, let's be realistic and honest, thought that Thompson was going to be the player he has turned out to be this year. I mean, he was just spectacular in the bowl game and in the Clemson game. And I think these guys are in practice every day. They see who is competing and how they're doing. And he obviously knew he was going to have to sit behind him as well.
Well, the only thing I had heard about Dylan Thompson was that he was going to make a nice tight end for USC one day. Right, nobody talked about him being a quarterback. So that's where people undersell these guys, unfortunately, because of the kind of publicity they get, the ranking. If you're slapped with a two-star ranking by some of these networks, then people think you can't play. And it's like, why are we taking this guy? He's only a two-star. And you can't put a star on a guy's heart and determination and grit once he gets into a school and starts working in the system. And you don't know how his skills are going to fit in the system. And Dylan Thompson has been a fantastic story at South Carolina so far. And if he continues to improve, you know, the sky's the limit for this guy because he's got skills and he does things extremely well in that Gamecock offense. His passing numbers are outstanding in terms of completion percentage. Not only that, he's Spurrier's type of quarterback from his old days. He's that guy that can break the big play with his arm, the 60-yarder. Go back and look at the number of 30-plus yard completions under Dylan Thompson that South Carolina's had. It's pretty remarkable considering the few number of snaps he's actually had.
Right, right. So, Phil, give us a kid in the class that's committed to South Carolina that you've either seen in person or heard a lot about, you think may be flying under the radar that may surprise some Gamecock fans either next year or down the road in his career. Is there anybody that comes to mind?
Well, first of all, nobody flies under the radar anymore.
Right, right.
Because there's so many radars out there. Everybody's got a recruiting radar, so nobody flies under the radar. There are hardly any secrets anymore. That being said, I can't honestly say I've seen a lot of these guys because on Friday nights I'm doing my high school scoreboard, so I don't get to see the games. And, of course, I'm not seeing the guys out of state, and I don't look at the film on the Internet and that kind of stuff. But I will say this. I did see Pharaoh Cooper at the Shrine Bowl, and I did see Lawrence Bryant at the Shrine Bowl, and I saw Gerald Turner, and I saw King and Park and those guys. But in particular, Cooper just jumped off the charts at me. What a talent. This guy could help. Well, they're going to have him in the secondary. There might be a bit of an argument between Steve Spurrier and Lorenzo Ward over where he should play. I've been assured he's going to stay on the defensive side. He has got tremendous skills. He's very elusive. He's very fast in the return game. And this is against high-quality talent in the Shrine Bowl now. He really stood out. If you saw that game, you had to be impressed. He was a one-man wrecking crew on offense for the North Carolina team. Really liked him. And I like Lawrence Bryant. He played linebacker in the Shrine Bowl, made a lot of plays. He's also a big-time running back coming out of high school. But in particular, you asked me that question of the guys that I've seen that I can recall. Cooper really impressed me at the Shrine Bowl. I think he's got a chance to step in and play right away.
Yeah, Cooper is a guy he's even talked about in interviews after Ace Sanders said he was going to leave for the NFL, that he felt like he'd have a chance to come in and take over that punt return job, and his star has certainly risen since the Shrine Bowl. I've heard a lot about him. You know, in the old days, there used to be a lot of criticism in South Carolina recruiting that maybe we got some really good skill players but didn't focus enough on the trenches. But did you ever think you'd see a South Carolina class where we signed zero wide receivers?
To be honest with you, no. but, again, keep in mind a couple things here with South Carolina. They have some reduced numbers because of the NCAA self-imposed penalties. So
right.
They can only have 22 initials. They can only have 83 on total scholarship. So maybe wide receiver was not a position of need. They only lose – well, they lose Ace, and they lose D.L. Moore. But they've got a good number of receivers coming back, and you got to believe, and I've heard good things in the winter workouts, that a guy like Shamir Jeffrey, for example, is going to rise up and be heard from this year. You got to believe that Demir Byrd's going to continue to improve and be a big-time player for them. You got to believe that Nick Jones, right? Yeah.
Right.
Who came on late and did well is going to continue to be a factor. Did they need to go out and sign a tall receiver maybe to offset all the Smurfs they have? Maybe so. But, you know, they looked at a couple of receivers. But really, and maybe they after, you know, when Ace first indicated he was coming back, maybe they said, okay, we won't take a receiver. And then Ace changed his mind. At one time, they looked at Kai Priester, who's going to Clemson, but didn't really push it real hard. So they must have looked at their numbers and their needs and said, we need help more in other places. So
right. They
boned up on the offensive line. They boned up in the secondary. They're trying to get a couple of more linebackers to help supplement what they have there. They've got the running back they wanted and another one. They got the quarterback they wanted. They did some good things on the defensive line with three defensive ends and possibly two defensive linemen coming in. They've got four coming in the secondary. So they've helped themselves pretty much everywhere across the board so far, except maybe a little bit of help at linebacker, and they're just going to take a pass. You can always get wide receivers. They lead on Shaq Davidson out of Gaffney, the number one receiver in the state for next year. Of course, he may play quarterback, but he'll be a receiver. They lead on him already. They probably feel like they're going to get him. So they'll make up at wide receiver in the next class what they don't get this year.
And Phil, I think just a quick follow-up on that, I think it sort of represents a shift in philosophy. I mean, look at how Spurrier has won. I mean, he's not winning primarily like he won at Florida with all the skill players. He's winning with defense. He's winning primarily with more of a running game, not as much of a passing attack as he used to have at Florida, but primarily on defense. And look where they're emphasizing. They're going out looking for those defensive linemen, which I'm sure you know is probably the most coveted position out there to get. I mean, the defensive linemen are hard to come by, and those guys are who separate, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, that's who separates – you know, good teams from great teams, especially the SEC. That's where the defensive linemen are part of what separates this league from other leagues out there. And I think that's a shift of philosophy among, you know, they can, if you can go get defensive linemen, get them. You know, you can find receivers, as you say.
Absolutely. You make a great point. In the SEC, the thing that separates the good from the great and the good from the bad is that line of scrimmage, and the great teams have a rock solid defensive line. South Carolina has had a very good defensive line the last 3 years. I think that corresponds with the wins. They'll have a very good defensive line coming back. And if, you know, Kelsey Griffin, I think you talk about a steal. I mean, I think Georgia's mistake is South Carolina's benefit. The fact that Georgia felt like he wouldn't fit in their 3-4. And they feel like Montrevious Adams will. They're going hard after him, and they passed on Kelsey Griffin. I mean, I don't know how much of a difference there is between Montrevious Adams and Kelsey Griffin. I know one thing. Kelsey Griffin looks like a load to me at 6'2", 290, and South Carolina's delighted to have him. If they can team him with Keith Bryant, they get him 306 pounds, 6'2", 306, to go along with the rest they have coming back on the defensive line. They're going to be well set in that area – for the next several years.
So Bryant really seemed like a lost cause a couple of weeks ago. Do you really think the Gamecocks have a decent shot at him at this point?
I think he was really impressed on his visit last weekend, really enjoyed it, loved hanging out with Clowney, loved the attention that the football players got from the fans, especially the way they reacted to Clowney. And I guess that visit was two weekends ago. Really enjoyed it all. And South Carolina, you know, very high up on his list. South Carolina, Florida State. I think it's going to be one of those two. He was once committed to Florida State. Miami's been in the picture. I think they've kind of faded. He says he's going to visit Florida Atlantic this weekend. I don't foresee them being a factor. I think that Grady Brown's done a heck of a job recruiting him and making South Carolina a factor with him.
All right, well, let's move on. We wanted to get just a couple of general recruiting thoughts from you and how recruiting has changed in the last, you know, 10 to 20 years. What are the biggest differences you see in covering this recruiting game, let's say, from the 1980s until today?
The fact that everything is out there now.
Right.
When I started in about 1979, when we first started realizing what was going on, when Joe Terranova was the first guy that we had run across who was doing something in recruiting. Joe Terranova was an engineer at Ford Motor Company in Detroit, and once a year in Sports Illustrated, he would rank the top 10 recruiting classes in the country. That's all you had. That came out once a year.
Right.
And it was Joe Terranova's top 10 or maybe top 20 recruiting classes. And we were like, what is this? Who is this Joe Terranova and how's he doing this? And Joe would get the information from the recruiting coordinators across the country and compile his list. That is truly where it started in my estimation. And so then, you know, that led to calling players and finding out what they were doing. And of course, back then, being one of just a handful of guys doing it, we had all the information and you could sit on it until your show that night and you could break the information. You could even sit on it while you're doing your show because there was no threat of anybody else having the information. You might have two or three commitments and you could tease for a good 90 minutes before you put the word out there.
Right.
You know, there's no teasing anymore because everybody's a reporter. Everybody's got a laptop and the internet. So that's the big thing that's changed, number one. And with that, of course, has brought more attention on the players, the creation of the recruiting networks and the system of rankings and everything that has come along with that has brought even more attention on the players. It's also moved the process ahead at lightning fast speed. Whereas years ago, after signing day, you never thought about calling a junior or a sophomore and checking on them in those days. It was all about the senior class.
Right.
And after signing day, you put recruiting aside for the summer. You pick it back up in August, and you start with the next class. But see, that's not the case anymore, and it's because these recruiting sites, they sell their information by memberships. They have to have information. And let's face it, if they were only dealing with the seniors now, there'd be very little information to put out there because most of the seniors who haven't decided, they're just going to wait till signing day now and make the announcement then. So there'd be no stories to write now. So you have to go to the next class to generate that information and the class before that to where we're now reporting on a freshman at Dillon High School who played in 6 games this year,
right,
who's gotten offers.
Right.
I mean, that's how far back it's reaching now because of the appetite for the information. It's feeding the animal, and this animal has an endless appetite. He has a bottomless pit for a stomach, and I don't think that's good, but that's just the way it is. So that's the biggest difference from the way it was when we first started doing this stuff.
Yeah. You know,
I think it's interesting here, and I can identify with this with you, Phil. You seem to be involved in an industry that you both love and hate. So I appreciate the hint of self-loathing that I feel coming off of you. I see you in the mirror, and it's me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think you hit the nail on the head there because I love it. I love covering the kids, and I love talking about them, and I love reporting about them. I don't love doing it 365 days a year. I don't think coaches like it. Coaches who are coaches because they want to coach and they don't want to be recruiters. You have some coaches who have their jobs primarily because they're recruiters.
Right.
And then you have coaches who have their jobs because they're coaches. Those guys don't like recruiting 365 days a year. That's what we're going to have now with the new rules, and it's a real shame the NCAA feels like they can't enforce the rules they had in place, and they're going to force these coaches to text and call and Facebook and everything else around the clock 365 days a year, or they feel like they're getting behind. That's going to be a real shame. It's going to lead to the burnout of a lot of younger coaches who are given this duty. The other thing that's happened, too, the players now, and they're changed, of course. The 18-year-old of today is different from maturation standpoint of the 18-year-old of 20 years ago. He's a lot smarter today. He's a lot more worldly and a lot more educated of the ways of recruiting. And he's a lot more jaded, too. I find it harder and harder as time progresses to reach the kids and get them to talk to you because there are so many people talking to them now. And, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. When you think about this, every major college football program in the country has at least four websites covering them for recruiting purposes primarily. Mm-hmm. When you consider Scout, Rivals, ESPN, and 24/7. So you've got at least four and sometimes double that on a network covering a single school, and they're all calling the same people. And then you have outsiders like myself and other real media types who work for newspapers calling too. So on a given day, and then you have the coaches calling. So you're a big-time prospect. On a given day, you might get calls from 10 different people, and they might call you five times a week. I mean, that's, you know, you get burned out on that quickly as well as a player, and you almost, it's almost impossible now unless you get in your car and drive to a school to talk to a player in person. Some of them, it's almost impossible to get on the phone. You have to rely on Twitter quite a bit. A lot of kids, of course, use Twitter to express their feelings or to put out their information. So you spend a lot of time going through Twitter feeds and checking Facebook to see what they're thinking.
Yeah, we love Twitter. I personally get the majority of my news and sports and entertainment from there. And part of the entertainment is watching K-Mac get in fights with people on Twitter on a almost daily basis. It's it's a lot of fun. So
he's a Twitter fiend. I am not a socialite on Twitter. I use Twitter strictly for putting news out. I could care less about getting into a conversation with anybody. But yeah, if you ever see our Sports Talk SC Twitter identification and it's somebody in a smart ass fight with somebody, that'd be K-Mac, not me.
Well, yeah, and T-Bone's gotten in a couple of smart-ass fights with him, and I think that's where our respect for K-Mac and just for the Sports Talk brand grew was we've also gotten in some fights with some other folks on Twitter, and they just immediately block us. So we like the fact that K-Mac likes to engage in a little debate there. So
we don't block anybody. We don't hide from anybody. We take the spears as well as the plaudits, the few that come our way. So
yeah,
well, that's how we try to be fair that way.
When Daryl Slater took the USC beat for I guess he's with the Charleston Post and Courier. We followed each other on Twitter for about 20 minutes before T-Bone got us blocked. But that so
yeah, the whole issue there was he said that South Carolina Clemson was exactly like Virginia Tech, and I said except only half the number of people are in the stadium. And he blocks me.
Well, so, you know, the South Carolina-Clemson rivalry, as we all know, those of us who grew up in this state, you have to kind of give him a little bit of a break because he's not from around here, as we say.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, we know how intense and how important that rivalry is. And I think it finally dawned on Steve Spurrier a few years ago about how important that rivalry is as well.
So speaking of the USC-Clemson rivalry, I mean, we're a Gamecock blog, Gamecock podcast, and for any of you Tigers that might get a hold of this podcast, we invited Phil on. He graciously agreed to come on here. I'm sure if there's a Tiger blog or podcast out there, he may be glad to do the same. But we got him, so we're going to talk to him about the USC-Clemson rivalry. From a recruiting standpoint, how different are the philosophies between the two schools? What's the biggest distinction in the Swinney staff and the Spurrier staff and how they go about their business of recruiting?
The biggest difference is that at Clemson, you have a head coach who believes recruiting first and foremost leads to a successful program. And in South Carolina, you have a head coach who believes, first and foremost, that great coaching leads to a successful program.
Right.
Spurrier is not a guy that is going to outwork anybody in recruiting. Never has, never will, doesn't believe in it. He works to what's necessary. He does what has to be done as far as making the in-home visits. He's not going to spend all day making phone calls, sending text messages, going on Facebook or Twitter. It's just not in him. It's because, well, he believes in himself as a coach and his staff as coaches and their own player development, number one. But again, he's also 68 years old, and he's from a different era. Dabo is in his 40s. He's from a different era, more inclined to be involved with the new media, the new social media, than an older coach is. And Dabo makes no bones about it. He has said it publicly. In his opinion, recruiting is everything in college football. Now, you know, both teams are very successful, and there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Right.
So what works for Clemson works for Clemson, and what works for South Carolina works for South Carolina. There's no question having good players makes all the difference. I think you'd be an idiot not to see a difference in South Carolina since they got Lattimore and Clowney and Gilmore and Holloman and Travion Robertson and Melvin Ingram and on and on and on. They've had good players, no question about it. Did they work hard to get some of those guys? No doubt. They worked very hard to get Clowney. They worked very hard to get Lattimore. So they have showed that they will do what they have to do to get the best players available for them. But they, just as a group, they just don't seem to live on the edge with recruiting from where I sit as much as the Dabo Swinney staff does.
Right, right. All right, we'll hit you with a couple of more quick questions, then we're going to play a little game with you, and then we'll let you get back to, I guess you'll still be doing your job when you hang up with us this time of year. So
back to the phone calls.
Right, exactly. Since you've been covering recruiting for South Carolina, who's the biggest disappointment that came through South Carolina based on the recruiting hype? And we've debated this on our blog a couple of different times.
Boy. Well, I know who I want to say if I can remember his name. There was a linebacker.
J.J. Brown.
Yeah. Obviously, this has been discussed.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I love J.J. Brown. J.J. Brown went on to do great things in his life as far as being a businessman and working with kids, as I remember the last time I talked to him. He's a terrific guy. But unfortunately, he was a victim of the hype machine. Number one linebacker in the country, as I recall, coming out of I want to say Chesterfield, somewhere over there, and went to Michigan, transferred to South Carolina, and they just could not find a place where they could play him. They tried him at linebacker, didn't work. They tried him at tight end, didn't work. So I would say that would be one pretty good example of where the hype just didn't fit the player once he got on campus.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the other two that we commonly throw out are Derek Watson and Demetrius Summers, which are a couple of the recent ones, but J.J. Brown.
But they, I would disagree with you because, mm-hmm. I mean, they failed for different reasons. They didn't fail because of their talent or their abilities. And actually, you know, Derek did give the Gamecocks a couple of really good seasons and did some very exciting things. They failed because of personality flaws that both of them had and could not get over at South Carolina.
Right, right. Yeah, and the other general question that G-Man wanted to ask you is Teddy Hefner the greatest athlete in the history of the city of Columbia?
My cousin Barry Lurie was a great athlete back in the day at AC Flora High School. He played for Cy Sakachi in that crowd.
Yeah.
So but now it depends. If you ask Teddy, well, it'd be a unanimous vote that it would be Teddy. So listen, for all the picking, Teddy's got the newspaper clips to prove that he played an important role as a running back at Dreher. So he can show you that he could break tackles and score touchdowns. And he knows the stats, too.
Does he carry a notebook around with him and just break it open?
He just keeps a little newspaper clip in his pocket just in case anybody questions him.
All right, one last thing we're going to do with you, Phil. We're going to have a little fun. We're going to play a little rapid-fire game. And
okay.
I'm going to give you two choices. And you pick one or the other, or you can pass if you're uncomfortable.
Don't pass.
But I'm going to say something like white or wheat, and your answer would be what?
Wheat.
Wheat. Okay. All right. So here we go. We're going to put 60 seconds on the clock, and we're going to do rapid fire with you. Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Recruiting season or football season?
Football season.
Lombardi or Wooden?
Lombardi.
Ravens or 49ers?
Ravens.
X's and O's or Jimmy's and Joe's?
Ooh. you got to be good at both. I'm going to say the X's and the O's.
George Rogers or Sterling Sharp?
George.
Tannehill or Ellis?
Tannehill.
Andy Demetra or Mike Morgan?
Morgan.
Wishbone or Pistol?
Wishbone.
Keith Jackson or Lindsey Nelson?
Keith Jackson.
Holtz or Spurrier?
Spurrier.
Bowden or Dabo?
Dabo.
Yankees or Celtics?
Tie. Depends on the season. Right now, Celtics.
Darren Horn or Steve Newton?
Ugh. Boy.
What we said.
That's tough. I'd have to say Horn because, I mean, he was never a crook like Newton was at USC.
Right.
So I'd have to go with Horn.
All right. Garrick or Ruth?
Garrick.
DH or no DH?
No DH.
Human growth hormone or deer antler spray?
HGH all day with a little monkey stuff thrown in there.
Ashley Judd or Danica Patrick?
You know, I kind of like Danica. Hard edge there. Give me a hard edge.
Samantha.
I hear you, man.
Samantha Steele Ponder or Aaron Andrews?
Oh, Samantha. I'm not a big Andrews fan.
Yeah, me neither. I'm with you there. All right, couple more. Cake or ice cream?
Ice cream.
Charleston or Greenville?
Charleston.
Twitter or Facebook?
Twitter.
Dogs or cats?
Better say cats. That's what we have.
All right, and the last one, Jadeveon Clowney or a cruise missile?
Clowney.
Good answer.
That's what we were looking for. I know who I'm talking to.
Phil, thank you so much. It's been an honor to have you on the show. Appreciate all your insight, and you know, have a great few days up until signing day, and we will certainly be listening to you on next Wednesday.
Listen, I appreciate you having me very much. Look forward to working with you guys. And we are always available for you. Me, K-Mac, or Professor Tom Hayes, you just let us know.
Sounds great. Thanks very much.
See you guys.
See ya.
Thank you.
All right, that is going to do it for episode number 41 of TRC Unleashed. We'd once again like to thank Phil Kornblut for joining us to talk about some recruiting. You can catch him on a daily basis on his show Sports Talk on the South Carolina Radio Network. Before we sign off, we'd like to remind all you Gamecock fans, it has now been 1,525 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. Look for us at therubberchickensblog.com or on Twitter at RUBRChickens, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks.